KFC.
How far did you guys actually get in your stories?
About 4 pages.
Zero words.
I have an entire outline.
Already.
I have an entire outline that literally would pander to every... It would tickle your taint.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Fangs and Fonts with your hosts, Roland,
Voice,
Yanara,
and Ocean.
And today, we're going to talk to you about the writer's ego. It's something that we all kind of fall prey to, and something we're all accustomed to.
So many pauses.
I'm sure you've seen some author out there who really whines when something bad happens about their work, or won't shut up when something good happens to their work. It's okay to, you know, share amongst ourselves, like, our rejection and acceptance, but we're talking more the people where you're kind of sick of them talking about that stuff and you just kind of want them to stop.
It even manifests in stories that we hold very close to our chest, things we don't like to hear criticism about or things that we're very proud of.
And it falls prey to everyone. Even the most famous of authors can fall prey to the writer's ego, or their lack thereof. That was a terrible sentence.
It was.
So what do we mean when we state the writer's ego? Well, as you all know, most artists of any type have an ego. It's just something that artists have to have in order to create and present their babies to the wider world. And as I said, it can be any artist. It can be visual, it can be literary, it could be performing.
Egos also present themselves in a variety of different ways, whether or not it's because we have no confidence in our work and we're fishing for compliments, or
covering up insecurities,
or somebody who's a little overconfident in their work and thinks that people don't recognize their brilliance. They're both very damaging, but I think in the proper dosage, having an ego can be a very useful tool as any sort of artist.
Which is, for the case of what we're talking about here with writing, the fact that you're sitting down putting words to paper, a really good quote that I was reading earlier states the fact of is in a normal conversation, you can take back or deny something you have said to someone else very easily. Say it enough times and someone's going to be start questioning whether or not you said what you may or may not have actually said. With writing, it's there. You set it down, it's permanently there. So for us as writers to be able to sit there and set something down, and not only that, but give it to others to read, it requires a certain amount of ego for us to sit there and look at it and be like, I wrote this, I'm proud of this, I'm going to hand it out for you to beta read. And then even to, you know, I'm going to do what a lot of people don't ever get past and hand it to a publisher to get published. Most people don't have that self-confidence or ego to be able to present their work to a publisher to see publication.
And I'm totally going to borrow from
this
quote that you've written down here as well, is that writing in itself is a very egotistical act. It is the act of writing something that you believe is something that others will want to read. It's you're ultimately looking for that kind of recognition, and that you believe that what you have to say is something that's worth listening to. And, you know, this isn't a bad thing. It's probably, well, no, I lost my train of thought. That little bit from before was from the Bureau of Better English. So thank you, Taro, for bringing that one up. So
as you were saying, everyone looks for validation in their work. Let's be frank. We as writers need that validation. We need people to sit there and look at our work. And I mean, it's like any project. It's your babies. If they sit there and they criticize it continually or validate it continually, your ego is going to fluctuate either way, and that can create a certain amount of flex within your own confidence as a writer.
I don't think you're required to show your writing to anybody else, but you are required to have some confidence in it. Otherwise, if you don't have confidence in it, you're most unlikely not going to continue writing.
Very true.
Right. And I think this falls into, you know, some people do hold their stories very close to their chest, but that's mostly from a fear that, you know, people think that others aren't going to think the writing is good enough, that other people won't see the value in their writing. And we as writers, as artists, we crave that sort of attention. Like, it's, you can say, you know, you can continue to write for yourself and without the validation of others, but I think everybody to a point likes to hear that they've done a good job.
And I think that's why any author, especially published authors or anyone who wants to get recognition for their work, that's why authors have at least some level of ego, is because someone has hopefully said something positive to them about it. And, you know, and it's hard not to get a little bit, you know, a little bit
puffed up
when someone's like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever read. I can't believe you wrote Wolf Sailor Moon fanfic.
Okay.
And yeah, I love the concept of that. That's really awesome.
That would be amazing. Somebody do that now.
I was like the tri wolf shirt with the moon.
Sailor Moon gets bitten by a werewolf and converts the rest of the Sailor Scouts.
But it's like, but
by accident,
someone's gonna read it and be like, there's gonna be that one person who reads it and goes, like, that's awesome. I mean, you can take a work that's terribly written, like Cupcakes or Rainbow Factory, and
oh.
For a sec, you said Cupcakes, and I thought you meant the novellas.
I did too.
Oh no,
until
I meant
Rainbow
I meant
then I realized
Cupcakes, the
about
Rainbow,
or
My Little Pony fanfiction.
Yeah,
okay. Just to clarify,
because they're terribly written, but the validation that those authors got because of the sheer subject matter.
And it's funny that the stories that came out of that were so much better than the original.
Yeah.
But sometimes an artist's ego is warranted. It's valid. You know, you have somebody that, you know, maybe they've started out, you know, with a fairly fragile ego. They put their work out, and then slowly over time, their confidence and their ego's been built up. And this falls into, you know, how we as readers and critics will sometimes unintentionally stroke the ego of, you know, certain artists or writers. And they get built up to a point where maybe they're warranted in having an ego. It may be a little unfounded, like they're the level of ego, but I think these people eventually reach a point where they have to build up that kind of an ego to maintain the image that they've created for themselves.
I would say take Neil Gaiman. Now, I will be the first to admit that I don't follow Neil Gaiman like, you know, constantly. I do follow his Twitter and I follow some of his posts, and he's a very entertaining man. But to have that much success, I mean, does he have an ego? Yes. But he's also kind of humble about it. And I think with the sheer amount of acclaim that he's gotten, it's hard not for him to have kind of that kind of little bit of edge of personality in that regards.
And look at the amount of hype surrounding Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, people like that come up with this fairly simple concept of something, and then people latch onto it, and you don't have much of a choice but to gain a little bit of an ego.
Mm-hmm. Well, just makes me think of Selena Kitt when she first started out. You know, she wrote her own erotica. She didn't really think it was worth anything. And then she came across a contest on Lit Erotica, and it was like, hey, submit your story. And I forget what the prize was, and she was like, okay. And then she submitted, and she won. And then she started submitting to other things because she got that boost, and people liked her work. And now she has enough money to start her, you know, she has her own publishing company, and now she's trying to
do
the whole...
She has money to do all the things.
Yeah, and it's just... like, for that level of success, it's like, that's a case of a very valid ego. But again, it's like, as we'll talk and later, it's that balance between ego and humility.
The examples that we've brought up, these are all very humble people that have done good
wonderful things with
yeah,
what they're
very
done
good
with their
things
work.
with their ego, with their fame, success, and their money.
Like, and we've talked in previous podcasts, and I'll bring it up again here because it's a perfect example. Then you have other people who, due to their egos, may not intend things that they state, such as, I am Kevin J. Anderson, author of more books than you will ever write in your entire lifetime. And, you know, where, yeah, okay, that's an egotistical statement, but if he didn't have that ego, he wouldn't make things like that, and it just, it taints kind of his image in that regards.
What about authors that are, you know, have written a famous work or a well-known work, and then they're not using their ego to boast about it, but instead they're using their fame or something to push an agenda, like Orson Scott Card? And the podcast goes silent.
I actually don't know who that is, so...
The guy who wrote Ender's Game and then went around saying that gays shouldn't be married and
basically used his popularity to promote anti-gay.
Sorry, I was busy writing down a point. What was your question?
What about authors who have written something that has gained, you know, they've gained some fame with it, and then instead of using their fame, like using their ego in a way to show how great they are, instead they now are able to use that to push some sort of an agenda or a political standpoint.
Santa, I think this is where it falls into the darker side of ego, where people let this kind of thing go to their head, and they sort of lose perspective on what it actually was that got them there. You know, it seems like people like that can't fathom how they could drop so low after they've been risen so high. And so they start to push their own political agendas. And
I think, but that specific example was started out with a political agenda. This wasn't an incidental downfall of his ego, but this was just something he had set out from the foremost to do.
And sometimes it brings to light some truly terrible people that nobody paid attention until then.
Well, it reminds me of Jan and I went and saw a screening of The Exorcist. And they had the little girl, who is now very old.
Very
bright. And she has only ever done The Exorcist. And she used her fame from The Exorcism to push pit bull protection and, you know, basically protect pit bulls. They're not violent and whatnot, which is a great way of doing it. But it's a case of, in that way, as you said, the darker side, where the ego is so so inflated that it's like, I am this amazing person. People will listen to me because I have done this amazing thing. But in the case where it's one thing, it's like, yes, you were in this movie as a small girl that was...
See, I think she used the popularity that ensued from the injury claims to state, you know, I'm a broken person as well. I understand what it's like to be seen as a specific thing. I'm using the money that I've gotten from doing all of this to illustrate how what you perceive will not be the real thing. Because she had some serious injuries.
I know, and she was promoting a very positive thing, but there's a certain amount of ego, both good and bad, where it's like, I have done this amazing thing, yet it's only one thing. And with it, I am pushing, you know, in this case, a good agenda.
Yeah.
In the case of Card, a negative thing. And it's just a case of kind of pumping themselves up with more of a importance than they necessarily have.
Child actors are actually a pretty good example of where the ego goes wrong. You know, you think about all of these kids that have had some pretty major roles.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, Michael Jackson, or I don't know, any of the kids from Full House or something like that. Like, where are these people? And the likelihood of it is that once the fame and fandom got to their head, or they've been immersed in this world for so long that they don't know any better,
mm-hmm.
their egos are so big and their expectations are unrealistically high that they just don't end up getting anywhere in the world because they no longer have perspective.
And that brings me into an interesting point, especially because we all have written within the fandom, which always carries with it the potential that you get a certain amount of ego from producing really, really good works in the fandom, and then say you try to move outside the fandom. Some people have done this successfully, some people have not. Because I'll be frank,
little pawn scenario.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be frank, you know, there are authors that do it extremely well. But publishing in the fandom is, in any fandom, is significantly different than publishing it outside in the big world.
And I think it's easy for the onlookers to go, oh, well, that was easy, when they don't see the years of work that the successful people have put in to be able to make that kind of a shift.
And this kind of goes, I guess, that is a huge difference when it comes to egos. You have justifiable ego versus not justified ego, where you have the people who have put that much work, that much attention into their craft, and have shaped it over years, and it makes it kind of a justified ego versus people, you know, I wrote one story, it's super popular, or two or three stories, they're super popular, I got, you know, 5-star, 4-star reviews, and I'm the best thing that there is.
What I see as like a justifiable ego would be, you know, you have somebody who's been writing for years, they do, like, you know, much like we do, we edit other people's work, we write our own, we work as like head editors to some degree, and, you know, for someone to go, hey, can you read my story, and you go, well, no, one, I don't know you, two, I'm far too busy, that's a justifiable ego, but what I would consider an ego nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying you're too busy to grant your time to someone else, and that may be true, but you've reached a point where it's okay for you to say that.
True. Now, when it comes to egos, when are they good? Why is it good? Can it be good? The first and foremost when it comes to being a writer is it helps us deal with rejection, something that we face fairly regularly.
How does it help you deal with rejection?
Because having a certain amount of ego, when you're faced with that rejection letter, you can sit there and look at your past accomplishments and work and get that ego boost where, yeah, I have...
What if someone has never been accepted?
Then that's a problem where maybe they don't have that level of ego or confidence, and unfortunately...
This sort of falls into the lack of confidence category when it comes to your ego, because you don't have anything to fall back on. If you get a rejection letter, and when I was still getting into writing, I received, you know, a lot of rejection. I mean, I wasn't that good of a writer, and really it was just a matter of you have to power through. So where the ego takes place in there is that you have to believe that your writing is good enough to make it into something.
Well, yeah, this is what I think is the example you guys have shown before, is that you started with rejections before you got your acceptance. You had the opposite, where you got accepted a bunch, and then you got rejected, and you said how much that took you off the rails.
And speaking
so
of
how
egos.
How did your ego help with that?
That's a very, very good point, is the fact that you, when you had your rejections, didn't have that fall to far ego-wise, where I did.
But at the same time, you receiving an acceptance letter for your first submission is a blow to my ego, having gone through several publications and getting rejected on several occasions.
And that's one of the things.
At the same time, my own ego would not allow me to stay there. I had to get my own acceptance letter, and I did.
And eventually it was my ego in our competitions with each other that made me power through my first rejection. Because, yeah, I admit I had the ego of, oh, good God, Roland is beating me on word count. I got to catch up.
I annihilated you that month.
Yeah, good God, did you ever.
And so this is where ego falls into a very wholesome category, where it encourages friendly competition. It encourages you to power through some of your low points and through rejection. So it's very good to have a healthy ego, because I see so many people that are willing to put something down because they're just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that defeats the purpose of doing something that you would otherwise enjoy if you weren't doing it for the validation of other people.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I will be the first to admit, the fact that Jan has a story in bookstores is a continual drive, because, yeah, I'm like, man, I really want that. And she succeeded. She got it.
You're like, wouldn't that be cool? Why can't I do that? Exactly. So you do it, and that's the point.
And meanwhile, it's a huge thing, and that's something to be proud of, and it is something of, it's a validated ego point where it's like, look, I can walk into any Chapters in Canada, and there's that book.
And so we have a point here on how having an ego changes your work. And the good ways that it can change your work is if you think about like the situation with that one guy that like everybody wants to hang out with, or that one guy you really wish would talk to you, or girl, or whatever. Think about how confident they are, how well they hold themselves. You know, they don't seem to be afraid of anything. And all of this comes from having a very solid egotistical foundation where they're not concerned about what you think. So they continue doing what they feel is best for them. And that kind of thing comes through when you're trying to write something. If you have no confidence in yourself, you're going to write very uncertain stories, things where, you know, you don't really know where you're going. And it's just, it falls apart because you have no confidence. You have no ego. And I think to be a good writer, you need at least a little bit of that.
Very well said.
Thank you.
I know.
Say it again, I missed it.
Well, good thing for you, it's recorded. Did you actually miss it?
I was literally out of the room.
to summarize, having an ego helps you be more confident in your writing. And
oh, so this bit that you... I've written in where it motivates you and gives you some confidence to move on?
Oh, that too.
Okay, good. Point covered. So... in a way, with writing, most of us usually have writing goals. There's something we want to achieve, whether it's short-term, long-term, whether it's the big lofty goal of be able to make, you know, $1 billion off of publishing, or, you know, or if you're just satisfied on like, oh, I got in another anthology, or I finished that novel and I can now sell it, you know. Either way, there's a piece of you that wants to achieve that goal, and that's dedicated to your ego. Your ego wants to reach that point.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like, we strive towards our goals, and there's a point to which, you know, much like Tarl and I were talking about, your ego will not let you fail those goals.
Because you'll look at other people's goals and go, in my example, Yanara's got a story published in bookstores. My ego goes, well, she can do it, yeah. So can I.
Yeah.
Sure,
or,
I'm
I
jealous,
can't believe that
but...
person got published. I can get published. Or I'll show them an even better story.
Well, that was the entire basis for wanting to write one of my novels.
Well, and it's the whole basis of writing stories. That's, I think, why we all end up becoming writers.
I didn't
want to
become
a
writer because some other jerk was being published. I want to be a writer because I enjoy it and I'd like to share my ideas with other people.
And because that jerk was getting published.
The jerk until now.
Well, one of the prime examples that usually ends up getting given, especially in writing 101's cases, is a lot of writers will pick up a book, read it, and go, I can do better. What is a more egotistical comment than that?
Ash, when he talks about how he used to be a slush pile reader for Del Rey, would be like, even the slush pile would be like, nope, I could write this better. Nope, I'm going to go write it better now.
But I mean, and that's the case, is an ego, a healthy ego, can provide the motivation that you need to move forward, as Ocean was saying, to publish work, to try to reach your goals, be it submitting to Equestria Daily, to getting published through Fur Planet, to getting published through people like Tor.
How many stories that you've written have started with, I could do better than that?
A lot.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think of one.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't think I can.
Usually I go, I like this really cool idea. Has anyone done that? Nope.
I don't feel proper stating my
I really can't think of any of the stuff that I've written that has had a source in I can do better than that. Or I could do that better, I should say.
I think I've submitted stories where I'm pretty sure my story is going to be better than other person.
I've submitted stories where I've gone, I'm sure I could have done
sounds
better.
Sounds horrible
but...
when I say it to myself, which is why I only say it to myself. But
good thing nobody else heard that.
I'm sure somebody else
get
is...
on a recorded podcast.
I'm sure there's somebody else going like, I can't believe Ocean is published. I'm going to jeepers. I should send them my stories. So.
Oh, the fuck, I've gone and read my own reviews on my stories, and I'm like... oh, this person hates me. Well, I'm just going to have to write better now.
I still look at some of my old works, and I'm just like, wow.
Oops.
What did I do?
But I can write this better.
What a jerk. Man, I can't believe this guy got published.
Who the hell wrote this? I can do better
than
that.
2 years ago,
okay,
me,
okay.
What were you thinking?
Prime example, my New Tales of the Old One story. 3 years old, and finally edits are handed back to me. And all the comments from this editor, and I'm just like, part of my mind's like, oh my god, do you not understand? The story is 3 years old. It was the second story I ever had accepted. Why are you trashing it? Or not really, he really wasn't trashing it. He was just actually properly editing it. But it still made me, when I had to rewrite certain sections, go, well, fine, fuck you. I'm going to write this the best I can right now to prove to you that I can actually write. Well, now,
that,
rather than 3 years ago.
That happened with my Roar story. I'm like, man, fuck this. I wrote it like 3 years ago.
I should point out that as much as we're criticizing your own past work, is that it's also a great feeling that you look at that and you're like, wow, I have improved quite a lot.
Yeah, which builds your ego.
Yes.
So what's the bad thing about building that ego, Roland?
So letting ego go to your head. Sometimes you think you're too good.
Or you're invincible.
Or you're untouchable, yes.
That you don't have to be held accountable for the criticisms, critiques.
That you're too good for editors.
That they didn't accept your story because it was just too good for them and over their head and they don't understand quality.
All very egotistical things to say and very... invalid criticisms.
Something that had been brought up in Unsheathed was I don't know how true it is. I trust Kyle on this, but author of Harry Potter,
J.K. Rowling,
in her later books.
J.K., I'm just rattling your bro.
Mark. In her later books. Basically got, due to her contracts, more and more freedom and less editing and suggested edits from her editors because she had become that famous that she was able to make that kind of, you know, negotiation on her contracts, going, well, I'm clearly a good enough writer. I don't need to listen to said editors, and I can take my books wherever I want, which unfortunately leads to some issues, unfortunately.
And
I haven't read them recently, so I can't.
Coming back to stroking the author's ego, is that that's where this comes into play a lot. You have people that unknowingly or unwittingly putting a lot of praise on somebody that's garnered a lot of fame or has written a lot of stories, and this leads them to believe that they don't need any outside influences. They don't need editors. They don't need, you know, somebody to publish them. They don't need, they really don't need any critique whatsoever. And it, excuse me, and it can lead to a very poor quality of work, you know, especially when you started out so well.
I mean, we've all seen those, at least I think we've all seen those writers where they get a 1 or 2 star review on, say, Goodreads. And usually they're the ones that don't have the smarts to hold back.
What's
their
the most
responses
famous example
of people responding?
The one author that went...
Hamilton? Laurel K. Hamilton, who
yeah.
called her readers stupid because
oh, yes.
they couldn't understand why there was so much sex in her stories.
Yeah.
And
this is what we talk about when we refer to having too much ego.
Is it's just, you know...
It incites a flame war in every discussion.
And it's a prime example. I mean, she's still feeling the repercussions for it, but... at the same point has done nothing to pay attention to her fans and more works. Her character Anita Blake keeps getting more and more powered and is sleeping with more and more people to the point where the last book I read, she is followed around by an entourage of people in 2 different toned shirts. I believe it's the red ones she can freely draw energy
yes.
from, which is sex.
Yeah.
So at any point she can be overcome by this succubus energy that her vampire lover passed to her, and literally she will fall upon any one of these guys in her entourage or multiple guys and have sex with them at
and
a drop of a hat.
Horribly mad at them and try to murder them. It's
so I if your main criticism either. From a lot of your fans is too much sex, not enough plot, what happened to the first beginning of your stories where, you know, it was all about the story, it was all about character development, and here it is now where it's just about the sex, and you ignore that completely, and not only that, call your fans idiots because they don't get the subtle nuances in your writing. Because
there are none.
I think the main point here is that you're never too big to pay attention to your readers because they're the ones that lift you up.
Yeah.
And, you know...
I think I'm going to say to start going off topic, so never mind.
Okay. We can go off topic.
Yeah.
Okay, at what point is it important that you're writing for your fans versus writing for yourself?
Well, I think when you're writing, you're always writing for yourself. I think when it comes to writing to your fans is when they start noticing certain tropes that you're doing, female betrayal, and... those are the things that you should pay attention to where you are literally starting to write the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Didn't your RF story have you like eat her face off because she was going to see on the book or something?
No, it was, there wasn't any female betrayal in that. He
okay.
was just slowly disturbing.
I think you owe writing for your readers as much, like listening to your readers as much as you owe it to yourself to encourage personal growth. Because when you start to do things like publish your work, you are doing it for your readers. You're writing for yourself, but you're also writing for your readers, which is why you have so many people that say, I just have to write for myself. I just have to draw for myself. I'm going to stop publishing to do this for a little bit because... when you're putting your work out there for people to buy, for people to read, that's the point at which you are responsible to listen to your readers because you're trying to sell them a quality product.
Well, there's also the people that I've met where they're saying, I'm not writing for myself. I'm writing because I want other people to read this. To which I've asked them, are you then not writing for their validation? Which then kind of is what you're looking for yourself.
Right. In a way, you're writing to fill your ego. You want people to recognize and validate that they want to read your writing.
And that, well, that's writing, because anything you write for publication is kind of being tailor-made for someone else's market. not your own, unless you're trying to publish a novel. And even then, I would say it's a 50-50 split, because in some cases, you're trying to write a novel that you know is going to get read, and you're not necessarily writing for yourself. Because, it goes down to the whole ego thing, where you're putting words down on a paper that you feel are important enough for other people to read. And the fact that someone else is going to read it is what you're looking for, which is why you're putting them down.
I think if you were going to write for yourself while also trying to maintain a source of income, that you would adopt a different business model. You would have something available for free to everyone, because you are just writing for yourself. And then to go, hey, if you like this, throw me a couple dollars. Because that puts the onus on them to say that I like what you're writing, so I'm going to give you money. As opposed to you going to the reader going, I've made this thing that I think you would enjoy reading. Please buy my book.
Well, it reminds me of, there's an artist that I follow, Devoid Kiss. And she is currently doing a comic that's about her boyfriend and characters that she's invented. It's solely her work, and she relies on donations from people who are like, hey, if you're enjoying this, put money in. But it's her story. And, you know, and as opposed to her doing commissions, where that's solely for her to make money based off of what other people want. So it's kind of that situation where one is for herself, where it's like, give me money if you like it, versus here's something that I'm giving you for the sole purpose of money.
Someone I was watching on a TED Talk the other day and was talking about today is Amanda Palmer. Very, very famous musician who puts her stuff out. And, you know, she started very small and went through record labels and all that. And then she started putting her stuff out entirely for free and has started asking for donations and picks up a lot of flack from it because, you know, she's asking for handouts. But she's received a lot of good
publicity.
Yeah, publicity and a lot of money.
As opposed to you two, who decided that everyone should get their album and basically force-fed it to people because their ego was so large that they thought everyone is going to want this. We'll just give it to them.
Yeah. Or Metallica, like the almost the pioneers of like the anti-piracy campaigns. You have these two very contrasting sets of egos. One that says, I think my stuff is good enough to give out for free, and you'll pay me anyway.
Yeah.
And then the other people going, we're too good to give our stuff away for free. And one of them is very selfish, and the other is very altruistic. And they have two very different results.
So, as we've brought up, having a bad ego can change the perception of you among your work group, especially if you're writing in something like, say, a fandom, or even just a specific genre, be it romance, horror, mystery, noir, wherever. If you tend to have a kind of the negative ego, quotation marks, it changes everyone's perception of you and how you're going to react to certain things. And the more bloated your ego is negatively, the less amount of editors, publishers are going to want to deal with you, the less that your fans are going to want to read your work, Hamilton being an example, and more of a negative view of the general public, which will prevent you from getting new people buying and reading your books.
And think of how bad of a taste it leaves in your viewership's mouths. Like, to bring back the example of Orson Scott Card, people are going, oh, Ender's Game is amazing, but he is a raging homophobe, and so is it okay to like his work?
Mm-hmm.
And it really depends if you're one of those people that separates the artist from the art. And I fall more into that camp, but if you see something and you realize that the author is a raging dickhole, or a lot in the same, the phrase, never meet your idols.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to know what kind of an ego they have from being brought up so high.
But if we're your idols, we'd love to meet you.
We don't count, but...
we don't have horrible egos at all.
I know some people, and often when somebody has such a large ego, it's almost always unwarranted.
What
if it's your ego that makes you think that it's an unwarranted? Maybe from their perspective, it's a warranted ego.
I've been wrong.
I'm just devil's
advocate. But it's much in the same way that it leaves a sour taste in your mouth to have met somebody so arrogant that you can't look at their work in the same way.
Do you have a
thought? It's a bit like having bad shellfish.
I am thinking about Comic Expo. The Soup Nazi was one of the special guests, and he was charging $50 for a autograph. And he had, you would walk by and full booth, people getting signed, like Sam from Lord of the Rings was full thing, and he was great and all that. Going through, and there's the Soup Nazi, completely empty. No one's in there, and he's just sitting there because no one wanted to fork out that much money for a nobody's signature because you were on one episode of Seinfeld.
And it's funny because some of these people only have that one claim to fame. That person that's written one book. That person that's been in one episode of Seinfeld. And this seems to be all that they cling to.
As your guys' favorite Castle quote is, you know, what did you do after you wrote your first book?
I shut up and wrote 37 more.
Yeah.
Well, it's like going to the Comic Expo for that example again. Tara Strong, she has been in everything. Like, from Timmy Turner to My Little Pony to Team Titans Go, she wasn't charging for autographs.
And Tara Strong is totally that person that would give you a hug on the street. Like.
She totally does. She hugs people. She talks with them. She, you know, drew smiley faces everywhere. Whereas the booth next to her was someone who was charging $30 for an autograph. I don't even know who the hell they were because I didn't care.
It reminds me of a little panel I saw about, I think it was about, like, the San Diego Comic-Con. And there's just this little sketch of, like, a table with... I think it was a shot at Penny Arcade, but it was like things I've touched $50 or something like that. And like that's kind of what you know what these people do. And I don't know much about Penny Arcade, but people get such a bloated ego about themselves that they think that they have the Midas touch. And that everything they produce is gold.
Which will bring us into...
I'm not a fan of getting autographs and paying large amounts of money for people to get pictures, but I know many people are, and I'm just going to put in the counterpoint that a lot of those people need to charge that because they are working when they do that. They're not just doing it out of their own heart to go see people, and some of them have such high demand that... You know, it's a supply and demand thing. There's a reason that it costs, what, $80 to see Stan Lee?
Well, and
that's... To be fair,
I have paid the $80 to see Stan Lee for a picture.
And that's why
Eric's... freaking Stan Lee.
Exactly. Everyone has their fans that they really like, and they don't mind putting that out there to spend 5 minutes with the person while they get a picture.
Jonathan Frakes has consistently only been $15 to $25 for an autograph for years, every year he comes.
I don't even know who that is.
Riker. Xanatos.
Okay.
But that's also why Charles' example is the Soup Nazi and not...
Yeah, I can understand that.
Because that's one of those cases where it's just... And,
like, he's
I
funny
don't,
for
I don't know why he's picked that.
Seinfeld.
I don't know...
You get a lot of, like,
business.
Old school wrestlers, like the Honky Tonk Man and all that, where it's the same case where they're charging for photographs and they realize halfway through the convention that no one wants to pay for their signature.
They realize
it's
that wrestling's
that, like,
not popular anymore.
Okay, Seinfeld references are the same level as Simpsons references. We enjoy them because we grew up with them. But kids today
don't
understand
this
those references.
This is very true.
I have a friend who's taught in college, and he used to put Simpsons references in his notes. No kid would get them. No one would laugh. He switched them up to bronies. Everyone got them.
Oh, dear.
Well, like, I might pay $200 for...
Nope.
Like,
what was it?
For
it
like
was...
an autograph from,
nah.
You guys are gonna make so much fun of me. The guy who played Jean-Luc Picard,
yes,
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart.
You could just pay $90 and get your picture with him.
But
you could,
like,
also pay $800 and get the whole cast when they were in Calgary.
But
yeah,
Patrick Stewart is such an iconic part of my childhood that,
yeah,
like, that's that's the kind of money I would consider paying for a person of that stature.
Well, it's like, okay, anyway, moving on. So when it comes to your work, having a negative or having such a bloated ego, as we've mentioned a couple times, you start ignoring advice from other writers, constructive criticisms from when it comes to your reviews and whatnot, and various other things that we call generally as writer traps.
You'll be too blinded by your own ego to see your own mistakes.
As even if you seek out other writers or editors.
But then you also have things where it's like you start thinking that, well, I just handed this in for a beta read. I'm going to ignore most of this because I don't have to pay attention to it. Or you get your edits back and you end up spending most of your time fighting the edits. I mean this not justified fighting, but unjustified fighting, where clearly the editor is correct and you're fighting them just for the sake of your brilliance.
Like, for all intents and purposes, like, a writer or an artist with a huge ego is like Kuzco in Emperor's New Groove. You're this pompous jackass who thinks that he's on top of the world when, you know,
you can't
take a step back and look at your own mistakes.
This is what I wrote.
It's a tweet from Ocean. Edits back. Day one, editor is stupid and wrong. Day five, that's a good point. Day seven, I wrote that. Day 10, why did they accept this?
Because that is the process.
It's like the stages of grief for writers.
The first day, you like, what are these? What this was perfect. What do you think? You have a problem with this? And then a few days later, you come back, you're like, I guess that's a good point. And then later, you're like, wow, hey, what did I do? And then at the end, you're like, why did they take this?
That's my entire editing process.
Well, it goes back to my old tales of the, or new tales of the old one, where it was like going through and it's like, oh, I'm so frustrated. I need whiskey for this. And then by the end, I'm finishing going, oh, where it's like, I really like the switch to first person or present tense here. And I think you should keep that. And I'm sitting there going, that was a mistake.
And now I'm hungover.
But it's a mistake. But okay, it works. But that's a mistake. I can't believe I made the mistake to change tense like that. So if you find yourself with a bloated ego, or you come across someone with a bloated ego,
we'll happily poke pins at you.
Take some Tums.
How do you
call it a night?
How do you combat a large ego, be it your own or someone else's?
Have a sarcastic friend.
You almost need someone to bring you back down to earth.
Callie volunteers.
But I think everybody sort of needs someone to give them a little perspective to bring them back down to earth. Which is sort of it's the support structure that we've built
with the writers group,
because
which is
we're all honest with each other, and you know, we don't always write the best material.
This Cthulhu Punk story is so fucking awesome. They'll get every reference in it.
No,
have you seen that? There's one going on Twitter today where it's no, no, for affinity not uploaded.
It was so good.
Sometimes we don't always give constructive feedback in the best of ways.
Yeah.
That's also going like when we've had, you have to be careful with your sarcastic comments and edits with people.
You taught me, by the way.
Taught you to be sarcastic? Or
no, you taught me to be careful with my own sarcastic comments by being really sarcastic.
I gave you a lesson of your own medicine.
If you find that it's your own ego, maybe take a step back. Realize you're not invincible. You're not untouchable. And, start listening to what other people are saying. If other people are telling you that 77% of your stories are female betrayal, maybe they're onto something, and you should write something different.
Aren't writing groups amazing?
Well, it all does come down to, as Roland said, like, we have the structure within our writing group to be able to sit there, and when one of us starts getting uppity, to sit there and be like, no,
hey,
dude,
remember this? Right.
Well, exactly. And sometimes that's what you need, a reminder of your shit.
Yeah, it's having a big ego is a little bit like telling the joke that you think is super funny, but everybody just kind of looks at you funny afterwards.
Awkward.
Like,
no, I like that. It's like, hey guys, check this out, and then you just like, everyone's like, you know.
When you're just a little too racy for everyone's comfort level.
Well, it's like that one review you get where you're just like, fuck, this is all wrong. How could this person not see my genius? Blah, blah, blah. And everyone else is like, everything is correct.
I believe I pointed that out in your beta read.
Coming down from, you know, such a big ego high, it's hard, and it's especially draining as well. Nobody wants to come down from their pedestal.
It feels good. It makes you want... One of the best things I ever was told was that people in general want to feel important. That's why generally people will sit there and go into long, drawn-out arguments about the stupidest shit. This is why there's so many wars fought over religion or political views.
Or horrible YouTube comments.
You or Cthulhu Christian crossovers.
Yeah. That's a long story, everyone. Ask me at RF and I will go into a long, long rant about it.
And he will love it.
Chair. And I will love it because... But anyway. But yeah. And I...
That's another good point is that that's where our expertise has come in too. Because... You know, much like Taro loves to write Cthulhu or female betrayal, Yan loves to write about fairies and magic and, I assume,
zombies. Zombies seems to be my thing.
And I always write about coffee shops and coffee and other things. And, like, these are all things
and
that we have.
And then there's
Ocean. He writes...
And Ocean loves action. See, and Ocean's ego prevented me from speaking further.
I want to be cool, too. But I want to shout
action,
out.
Noir, pulp, like, these are all things that we have very high level of confidence that we all feel comfortable writing.
And I think that one way that we keep our egos from getting too large is that we write other stuff. We try other genres, be they successful or be they not successful.
Because then if you suck at it, you're like, I've tried something new.
And that's one of the best things that anthologies are for, is getting out of your comfort zone.
And failing at it.
Well, and...
So you want to talk about rejection?
No, I was actually just thinking that I was unable to finish the noir. We will not touch on that angering rejection point right now. I have about 7 people that agree with my anger at this point, so I'm okay.
Mark, by the way, that's not getting
it. Obviously, yeah.
No, obviously.
I'm going to put it at the front.
Well, I was like this week, and I'm like, I'm going to try and write a 10,000-word noir story and edit it in the same weekend.
Yeah, I got sick.
To be fair, I got along pretty good, but then I just kind of got despondent and went, I can't write mystery. What the fuck was I thinking?
Don't worry. A lot of other people couldn't either.
Yeah, apparently. God. Frick.
Like, to be fair, I think I even posted this on Twitter. I'm like, I'm still waiting to read the story where the antagonist or the culprit is not completely obvious, because and some of it is mostly due to like the short
nature.
Like 10K, you can only do so much, but still at the same time, it's like, who could it be? What are my options? Character you introduced me to 2 scenes
maybe
of the story, and that's it.
Maybe it's that guy with the top hat and the really twirly mustache.
Maybe it's the one character you
maybe
took time to describe.
Mustache.
So I came across some really good quotes that sum everything up. Jeff Goins states, don't fall in love with yourself, fall in love with writing. And I think that is something to keep in mind when it comes to writing, is that really you are okay to fall in love with your works. They are your babies. Falling in love with yourself is really just kind of disastrous
and egotistical
and masturbatory. Paul Astor, and I'm not going to actually say the quote because it's awkward because I cut and pasted it wrong, but basically states that a novelist should believe that it's the burning need to write, not the need to be praised, that should spur great writing, which I wholeheartedly agree. We all write because we have that burning need to sit down and
tell stories.
Tell stories.
That's where it starts.
Shut the voices
yeah.
up.
We're not doing it to get praised. Sure, we would like that validation, as we mentioned, but that's not the initial.
It will not be the last time that we say we did not start writing for money.
Now the one from the Bureau of Better English, that's a bit long, that we were talking about in the beginning. Writing is an egotistical act. Let's call a spade here. To sit down and to write is to assert that I have something to say that is valuable enough to read. Paradoxically, ego is the enemy of good writing. The hallmark of a good writer is navigating ego and humility. You have to have the ego to show up with a pen in hand. After that, it had better be all humility. Here's why. Writing means nothing if it isn't read by someone. If you bring a need to demonstrate to the whole world how smart you are to the table, the audience isn't going to like your attempt to make them feel stupid.
And that's something I see in a lot of writing.
Yeah, and we kind of had a discussion before we started recording about how you see it in a lot of places where there are people who are writing for the sole purpose to make other people feel stupid. It shows in the languages they choose. It shows in how they react to beta reads and edits.
I think you could even go as far as to say that you could see that in the evidence of the wording they use instead of using...
I want to swallow a dictionary?
Yeah, they're trying to force you to swallow a dictionary and a thesaurus and one, and you're sitting here going, why would you use that 17-syllable word when really
or
layman term would have been
or
more
antiquated terms in a modern setting? There's many reasons why you shouldn't use ancient terms in modern writing. It's just, it doesn't fit.
It's jarring.
There are so few people that I've come across that have come in with the end goal of sounding smart that have ever actually done so. Writing with an ego and a burning need to demonstrate how smart you are makes you sound arrogant and pompous.
Yes.
Jackass.
Which no one wants, and no one will want to read an author that is literally attempting to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all read stories by authors who have done so. And I've also read stories by authors who decide they didn't need an editor. But anyway.
As have we all.
So, that's our episode on ego and writers.
I think we covered some good ground on this.
My ego is sufficiently pompous up to this one.
If your ego will not let you accept this podcast, please email us at...
I wasn't ready for that yet.
Oh. What were you ready for?
I was going to wrap it up. You guys never let me wrap it up.
Okay, wrap it up.
Wrap it up, baby.
So,
wrap it up.
Do not start winter wrap up.
Winter.
Oh, no.
Winter wrap up. It's another thing I'll have to show you. Because...
So it's important that, although, like, having an ego isn't a bad thing. It's just important to remember to use that to motivate yourself and push yourself to not only improve, because then you can feed your ego some more, but also to, you know, remind yourself why you're here, to achieve those goals of what you're writing for. But at the same time, you have to make sure you keep it in check. That you also have to keep it in check. You don't want people turned away from your writing because they can't stand how you talk about it. You don't want to, you know, like, you don't want to whine when, like, sorry, let me start there. You don't want to be, we're all there when you get the rejection letter. We all realize that it happens. That's probably why I was able to accept my rejection letters that I've gotten, is because people had constantly told me it happens. You get, it's a milestone almost. I think Mary Lau's group, you get cake.
It's an accomplishment. you see the little achievement unlocked first rejection letter.
Yeah. Aww. It's as I'm going through my noir submissions right now, I'm going to like, oh, I'm going to make this person sad. Like, and I'm going to make this person happy at the same time. But it's important to realize that those are things that happen, and it's good to be excited and sad for them. But it's also important that there's a part where you can go too far, you know, where we're there to support you when you get the rejection. But when you start whining about it, we're going to start taking a step back.
Or just mocking.
We'll take back the cake.
At the same time, it's great that you got an acceptance, but also remember that there were other people that got rejected, and so maybe they don't really feel great when you're talking about how amazing your story is and rubbing it in everybody's faces.
Like a piece of cake.
Wedding cake.
Rejection cake.
And, you know, in the same sense, it's great that your book has sold well. Like, there are other people out there also struggling. And there's always that one douche that we're always like, I want to write better than them. Do you want to be that douche?
You could be someone else's douche that makes them want to write better than you.
So that's my take home.
Very nice take home.
Now you can do your ego bit.
So, if we've bruised your ego, or your ego requires you to say something in response to our podcast, please feel free to contact us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com.
Yes.
Yay! I remembered for the first time ever.
On that note, I'm still thinking of changing the email because we're getting like 6 spams a day.
Is there no junk mail filter or something for because
I think I have to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, we'll figure that out later.
Yeah.
You can also find us at fangsandfonts.com, on Facebook at fangsandfonts, on Twitter at fangsandfonts,
on For Affinity at fangsandfonts.
When it's not.
Yeah, you can figure it out by now, I think.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, we should probably update those pages too.
I do pretty good on the Facebook page.
Oh yeah, no, the Twitter, it's always the Fur Affinity weasel so furry.
I dislike working on Fur Affinity, but hey.
Anyways,
thank you all. Don't forget about the Sailor Moon wolf story.
And someone has to write a Sailor Moon wolf story for Callie.
Yeah, send us your comments. We love you all. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We haven't gotten married on Gaia yet.